Before you listen to today's broadcast, can I ask you to do three things? First, pray with me that God would use this show to touch many lives in a lasting way. Second, if you're blessed by the broadcast, share it with others. Tell others about the Line of Fire. And third, would you pray about standing with us in support with a one-time gift or as a monthly torchbearer to help us spread the fire? If you'd like to stand with us, go to askdrbrown.org. Click on support. Be blessed. Did you hear about the judge who sentenced the parents of children who are in gangs to attend special educational classes? Could this be a brand new direction in the law? Or does the judge have the right to do this kind of stuff? We'll talk about it.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Tackling the controversies, engaging the culture, challenging the status quo, and taking your calls. Dr. Brown is the director of Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Call now at 866-34-TRUTH and get into the Line of Fire.
Yeah, this is a true story. It's being widely reported across America. A law now in California gives judges the right to sentence parents of kids in gangs. That's right, the parents of the gang kids get sentenced to attend, well, I'm putting it that way, they get sentenced, they are required to attend educational classes that will tell them about what's happening in the gangs, how to identify what's happening with their kids, and how to help them parent the kids. Good idea? Or is this just another example of government, law, courts going way too far? Michael Brown, thank you so much for joining us today on The Line of Fire. The number is always to call 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Or you can weigh in with many others on the Ask Dr. Brown page on Facebook. Great place to hear what others are saying and to share your own opinion about this very subject. That's Ask Dr. Brown on Facebook. Another reason to go there: we just posted a number of pictures from our trip to India last week where you can see firsthand some of what went on, and hopefully give you more of a glimpse into the power of those meetings and the power of those lives as they are given over to the Lord. I've got a lot of other things I want to talk to you about today. An editorial in the local gay newspaper came out about me. It's actually entitled "The Prayer for Michael Brown." I'm going to read that to you. You'll find it fascinating. Found out about some behind-the-scenes battles on Wikipedia, the free online encyclopedia that most everybody uses these days, but it's got to be used with caution because the entries are not necessarily academically or scientifically accurate. It's whoever is writing and has control of the thing, and others give input and others critique and back and forth. And sometimes the articles are great and very helpful. Sometimes they're filled with bias. So I just got updated on a little Wikipedia battle on my entry there. We'll tell you about that. Hopefully get to some more on the Southern Poverty Law Center's criteria for hate list. And I'm going to play a clip for you on the 12 days of Christmas later in the show. Trust me, you do not want to miss this clip. All right, back to the story. Let me read to you from Thomas Watkins, Associated Press, from yesterday, Sunday, December 12th. Los Angeles. It's a Saturday morning, and a half dozen adults are sitting in a high school classroom staring at grim photos of sickly drug addicts and hearing about the deadly consequences of gang crime. They'd rather not be here, but a judge made them come. The moms and dads were ordered to attend the class under a new California law giving judges the option of sending parents for training when their kids are convicted of gang crimes for the first time. So there's specific criteria, and the judges have the option to do this. Kids are convicted of gang crimes. It's the first time. So the parents now, they need to be exposed. They need to know what's going on. Assemblyman Tony Mendoza, the lawmaker behind the Parent Accountability Act, said it is the first state law to give judges the power to order parents of gang members to school, though other court-mandated classes exist at the local level. He said a lot of parents do not know how to handle teenagers. Now more than ever, parents need a guide. Authorities say Los Angeles County has about 80,000 gang members just in Los Angeles County. Can you imagine that? Though those estimates vary, parents in gang neighborhoods often struggle to make ends meet, find themselves working more than one job. The long hours mean they can't spend much time with their kids, and some youngsters say they are tempted into gang life by a sense of companionship missing from their own family. said Socorro Gonzalez, a housekeeper, who was ordered to a recent class after her son, a member of the Sanford gang, got into trouble. "The most difficult thing is to have control of the kids. When I come home, I don't know what they've been up to." A little more from the article. Jose and Rosalva Rodriguez attended one of the first classes, which was held on two consecutive Saturdays at a high school in the San Fernando Valley. Their 16-year-old son had been accused of spraying graffiti when police arrested him at a party attended by gang members. In addition to sentencing him to 1 year's probation, community service and counseling, the judge ordered the parents to attend the class, where they heard about tough legal penalties levied against gang members and how they could get more involved in their kids' lives. "It was very important," Jose Rodriguez said after driving an hour from Lancaster, a sprawling city in the high desert of North Los Angeles. "I'm going to speak to him, listen to him, give him advice." The 48-year-old baker said he learned how to spot the warning signs of gang involvement, including if his son was carrying markers that can be used for gang graffiti. Other court-mandated classes exist, including the Parent Project, a 10-week program in Los Angeles County that counsels parents and their kids who may be skipping school, taking drugs, or involved in gang life. Rick Velasquez, executive director of Youth Outreach Services in Chicago, said parenting classes seem like a good idea, but noted that judges could often do a much better job of getting parents involved in their child's activity simply by speaking with them when they show up in court to support their children. Okay, what do you think of this? As always, let me try to look at it from two different angles. From one angle, boy, a lot of these parents need help. A lot of these parents are in over their heads. A lot of these parents are naive. A lot of these parents don't really know what's going on in the schools, don't know what's going on with the gangs. Their kids are getting pulled into gangs. Not all their kids are gang leaders. They need to be informed, and they need to be given tools. Hey, moms, dads, here's how you deal with this. See, I used to be in a gang. Here's the gang psychology. See, this is how it works. This is what's going on. This is what the kids are looking for. Hey, you can't just yell at them and tell them not to. Here's what you have to offer them as an alternative. Okay, you may not have the time or the resources to help, but here are some recommendations. And they're going to equip parents. They're going to educate parents. They're going to help parents. Maybe in a few weeks of time, these parents will have skills that they never got from their own parents. Maybe they grew up in messed up family lives to start, and it was very difficult for them to get their feet on the ground. So these court-mandated classes will be helpful. Just like if someone loses their driving license for some violations, they can be sentenced that they've got to go to a driver ed class and maybe sit down and pay attention and learn the things. And by the way, I just remembered this. When I was in high school and going to a driver's ed class, I remember watching this movie, and it was just an old black and white movie, and it was the guy who was like the expert, the teacher of proper driving, par excellence. This guy broke every rule. I mean, he's coming on to a freeway, and of course you're supposed to be looking a certain way for the traffic, and he's looking at the passenger next to him that's recording the thing. And we were in such a state of shock that we actually had a discussion with the teacher who was overseeing the class. Could this be done intentionally, that the guy is actually going out of his way to violate all of his teaching principles to see if we'll notice it, or was this guy kind of like an absent-minded professor? Anyway, that's an aside, but you get the analogy. You have an issue with driving, so you go to driver's ed. Your kids have an issue with gangs. The parents go to special classes. They get equipped. They get help. Hey, how can it hurt them? How, if they have the time to do it, can break away from other things, how can it hurt? All right, on the other hand, are you kidding me? The courts are going to tell the parents how to raise their kids? I mean, how far is this going to go? What if it gets into areas that we differ with? What if the courts determine that it's the kids have too much religion or too much Bible? I know it seems ridiculous, far-fetched, but hey, how much power do we want to give to the courts? And after all, these parents may be breaking their backs just to make a living and may be loving parents and pouring into their kids, but the kids are just in a rough gang environment and it's almost impossible to function and live in that setting without being part of the gangs if you don't want to get beat up or if you don't want to get cut out of social life. So what are you going to do? Add more condemnation to these parents or lay a further weight on them? And after all, what if the judge makes a wrong decision? I mean, picture if it's you, you're the parents, and you've already read up on things, and you understand what happens with gangs. Maybe you came out of gangs yourself, and that you don't need a judge to, you're going to sentence you? The assumption is that if your kid's in trouble, it's guaranteed that you're being a bad parent? So is this a good idea or a bad idea? How would you feel if this was happening to you? Your kid gets arrested for some gang activity, first time offender, wherever you live, wherever I'm talking to you right now, wherever you live. Your kid goes to court, so he gets probation, whatever the thing is, and now you find out at the sentencing that you, the parents, are single mom, single dad, that you will now be required to attend classes. Would you think, wow, okay, let me take it on the chin, let me feel the weight of this, and let me work with my kid to help. This is a good thing. This is positive. I welcome this, and this is only going to help. Or how would you feel? How would you feel if the judge says, okay, beginning in 3 weeks, you have to be at this place every Saturday or whatever the time is. You've got to be there for these educational classes. Would you take that as an intrusion of the court into your life or as something necessary? Bitter pill to swallow, but necessary, helpful. What do you think? What if it happened to you, your kids? 866-34-TRUTH. When we come back, you're going to hear an editorial in the local gay newspaper about yours truly. Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire broadcast. Michael Brown, as always, delighted to be with you. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. What do you think of the idea that judges in California can sentence parents of kids who are first-time gang offenders, convicted of gang crimes for the first time, sentence those parents to attend mandatory classes, parenting classes, to help them deal with their gang kids? Great idea. Forcing parental accountability, giving them tools to deal with their kids more effectively, or too little, too late, or ugly government interest. Stay out of my life, government. Stay out of my life, courts. 866-34-TRUTH. Okay, before I read some of your comments and interact with you about this subject and take some calls, let me read to you a prayer from Michael Brown by Matt Comer. Matt is the editor of Q Notes. This is the second editorial I think he's written about me, but I often come up in the news there with other Christian leaders in the city that take issue with gay activism while reaching out to the homosexual community with the love of God. So those of you that listen to this broadcast, you'll find this fascinating. Now, I challenged them that there were false statements in here, blatantly false statements, and they printed at the end that I took issue with some of these with how my position on some issues was being represented, and welcomed a guest editorial from me, so I should be sending that in for their next edition, which comes out, I think, every 2 weeks. All right, and on our website, AskDrBrown.org, if you click on the Line of Fire, there's a link to this editorial. The only thing I'd say is if you write in, speak graciously to Matt. Don't bash him, because on the link you can add comments. If you're going to represent Jesus, do it in a way that's honoring to the Lord and honoring to us, your fellow workers. All right. Matt writes, when I moved to Charlotte in 2007, I knew I was moving to a bigger city compared to my hometown. Charlotte really is a metropolis. Towering buildings uptown, mammoth-sized suburbs, highways, and traffic galore. What I didn't expect, however, was just how conservative Charlotte is. Now, this isn't a rant about city leaders or government, not this time. What I'm talking about now is the surprisingly well-organized religious right in the Queen City. In my mind, big city had always been synonymous with progressive. One look around the religious political landscape here and one quickly learns Charlotte breaks that mold. By the way, praise the Lord for that. My interactions with Charlotte's right-wing fringe have been numerous enough. I know several of the area's anti-gay activists and leaders, and they know me. In particular, Operation Save America's Flip Benham and Coalition of Conscience's Dr. Michael Brown have been among my chief contacts. I used to think Benham and Brown were of the same mold. I thought both were hateful, deranged, and dangerous anti-gay militants. That's mostly true about Benham. His wanted posters of a local abortion provider eventually got him convicted recently of stalking a doctor. By the way, that verdict is under appeal. Benham's tactics are in-your-face and confrontational. Brown, on the other hand, is a little more reserved. I might even dare say he's a little more respectful and polite. It doesn't make him right, of course. He's still wrong, still preaching exclusion and hate and pushing people away from Christ rather than pulling them in. Chief among the many social justice lessons I've learned is the importance of seeing the humanity in all people, even in your adversaries. Many of the LGBT community's greatest opponents actually do believe they are doing good. Deep down somewhere in their hardened heart, they sincerely believe what they do is beneficial and divinely inspired. And after years of interactions with Brown, I've finally come to see more and more of his own humanity, particularly a more private and sincere side of him I'd never seen before. I'm now convinced that Brown honestly does believe everything that comes out of his mouth. Hey, Matt, I'm pleased that you know that I'm speaking the truth from my heart and seeking my best to honor the Lord and show genuine love to you. Matt continues, of course, it takes truly honest belief to make the sorts of outlandish and ridiculous statements Brown airs publicly in debates and commentary on his radio show, comparing homosexuality to child rape, stop editorial for a moment, which I've never done, would never do, who could imagine comparing consensual acts between adults, even though those acts are wrong, with the rape of a child. So he writes, and this is one of the things I told him is blatantly false and completely inappropriate. It's just false, misleading, and defaming. But in any case, I'll get to respond with a guest editorial just to set the record straight and to reach out again. But Matt writes, comparing homosexuality to child rape, for example, takes some sort of deeply rooted dislocation from reality. In a recent commentary on his blog, Voice of Revolution, Brown digs into recent reports from the Respect-It, which is laughable, Southern Poverty Law Center's naming of several anti-gay religious organizations as hate groups. His words provide more than ample evidence of a journey into delusion. Quote, quoting me now, there was a time when the Southern Poverty Law Center was highly respected for exposure of hate groups such as those of the neo-Nazi and KKK brand. Today, however, it's almost a badge of honor to get a place on the SPLC listing, be it as an official hate group or merely as an anti-gay group. After all, now that the American Family Association, Concerned Women for America, Carl Rich Ministries, the Family Research Council, Liberty Council, the National Organization for Marriage, and the Traditional Values Coalition qualify, it's actually a little disconcerting to be left off the anti-gay list, end quote. This worldview that allows Brown to paint gay people in the same light as child rapists, again, never did it, wouldn't think of doing it. This worldview that allows Brown to paint gay people in the same light as child rapists also allows him somehow to think of being named a hate group as some kind of honor. By the way, Matt, check out Matthew 5:10-12 and see what Jesus says about rejoicing when you are hated for the gospel, hated for doing what's right, hated and falsely accused for kingdom issues. He then continues, it's this kind of thinking that truly defines Brown's unique brand of lunacy. I've struggled immensely with my thoughts, Matt writes, opinions and feelings toward Brown, especially in recent weeks. Bless you, Matt, for struggling and working through these things. I'm really praying for you, often with real intensity and passion. And I'm asking my listening audience to pray with me. What do you pray for, Matt? Pray that the love of God would flood his life. The love and light and goodness and truth of God would flood his life until it rocks his world. And by the way, feel free to pray that identical prayer for me. I've struggled immensely with my thoughts, opinions, and feelings toward Brown, especially in recent weeks since his debate on homosexuality with Orthodox Jewish Rabbi Shmuley Boteach in early November. I've often sat alone thinking about my interactions with Brown. I've gone back and read many of his writings, and our interactions. It's hard to despise a man when pity starts to take over. Brown tells us that it's his goal to see gay and lesbian people's lives transformed and brought to Christ. I think he honestly has faith in the power of Christ to transform. Matt, you bet I do. Matt says, so do I. In this instance, however, I'm afraid it is Brown, not LGBT people, who really needs the transformation. I'll never recognize or admit his words are hateful or hurtful because he's blind to the truth, the kind of truth that really sets people free and brings them into a radically inclusive communion with each other, the world around them, and the divine. That is a truer, more Christ-like gospel message I hope one day Brown hears and receives. Hey, Matt, thanks for the prayer. Thanks for the editorial. Obviously, I think you're missing the point profoundly. But bottom line is this. The inclusion that Jesus practiced was not to say take in a pedophile or an adulterer or a prostitute or a tax collector or a religious hypocrite or anyone else and affirm that person. It was to take in that person and change them. I call it transformational inclusion. When you get close to Jesus, he reaches out for the ones society rejects. He reaches out to the disenfranchised and the marginalized. What does he do? He transforms them, changes them, sets them free from life-controlling habits, addictions, sinful attitudes, orientations, and makes us anew in the image of God. Let's pray that for Matt and for others in the homosexual community. that Jesus would transform them as he has transformed us. All right, back with your take on the court sentencing of parents of gang members and a whole lot more. Stay with us. Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire broadcast. We're talking about new ruling in California that enables judges of first-time offenders in gangs. Judges can now sentence the parents to a special educational class. Our question has been, is this useful, helpful tool, something that parents need, calling them to accountability? Is it too little, too late, laughable, that it's going to do any good? Or is it an unwelcome government intrusion into our private lives? All right, I've also got a special announcement I'm going to give you in a moment, but first let me go to the calls and then read some of your comments, beginning with Donald in, all right, you got to tell me how to pronounce this place again where you live.
Unfortunate. Fuquay Varina.
All right, it is Fuquay. Yeah, it's come up a few times, and I always lose confidence that I'm going to get it right. Let me say it a couple times. Fuquay Varina. This is right. I'll remember it. Fuquay Varina. All right. Thank you, sir. What's your take on this, Donald?
Well, if the information is available and made available to parents before there's a problem or when they suspect something's going on, that's a help. That's something the government can give us to help. But to order us to do it, that isn't correct, because when the people need help, that's when the government seems to want to punish instead of help. That's all I have to say about that.
All right, so Donald, let me play the devil's advocate on this, or at least take the other side for a moment. Let's say you got a 13-year-old kid in your house. There is the assumption that you as a parent have some responsibility or some accountability for that kid. So why can't the judge hold you responsible for what a minor living in your house does, at least to give you more information to help that kid?
That's what I'm asking. That's what I say should be.
But okay.
To force me to, when I need it, is a punishment. But to give it to me as an available help is different. You understand the difference.
Got it. So you're saying, okay, make it available in advance, try to educate in advance. Once an actual situation arises, then let the judge say, okay, here are resources for you that would be helpful with your kids. But if you're going to now require it, that's going to feel like a punishment on you, the parent, for what the child has done.
I would say it's a necessity.
Got it. All right, yeah, and this is something the courts can actually require. I don't know the penalty for refusing, but from my reading of this, the courts can require it. Hey, Donald, thank you for weighing in, and tell me again where Fuquay Varina is in relationship to Charlotte.
It's in the middle of nowhere.
Okay.
No, actually, it's around Raleigh. It's below Raleigh, Cary, Garner area.
Got it. All right. Yeah, I'm getting some input from our producer here near Raleigh. All right. Thank you for calling in, man. I appreciate it. And for the education, the geographical education. Bless you. Let me read a few of your comments on this as well, because a number of folks are favorable. Jennifer, too little, too late. Sarah, I like it. I like it a lot. This is Sarah from California. Joel, I do think parents do share certain responsibility in their kids' criminal behavior. Some parents are so uninvolved with their kids, it's negligent. I don't know if a class is best suited, but something needs to be done to get parents' heads out of the clouds when it comes to their kids' formation. Daniel, hopefully the parents will sit up and take notice of their kids' activities. Tom, a good first step. They should also be criminally liable in part. It's child abuse, commenting on what someone else said. That's why parents should be held criminally liable in part. Bob, it's a pitiful state of our nation when the state seems compelled to intervene in the personal lives of its citizens for reason of gone wrong parenting. I don't like it at all. But government do good ideas are the easiest to sell, as this one is. It really raises a lot of related questions, because there are certain things that, say on the surface of it, take euthanasia in an extreme case of someone 98 years old that's not going to recover from an illness, that's in day and night agony, and is just asking, look, I'm going to be dead in a month, take me out of my misery now. obviously that has a compelling feeling to it. You think, what if I were that person? Or if you're trapped in some state and you can't get out, and shouldn't you be able to tell them remove life support and so on? You can make a very compelling argument. But what happens is, inevitably with euthanasia, there's always the slippery slope. Of course, I say we don't play God anyway. You can have a will where you say no special means to keep me alive and thus in such conditions. That's one thing in advance. But the idea that we just say, okay, and I'm not getting into a lengthy euthanasia discussion, so don't call in to weigh in on that. But as much as you can make it a compelling case, or I should say at least a moving case in some situations, the fact is it always opens the door and it becomes the slippery slope and so on. Okay, so why do I bring that up? Well, I bring it up because in the case at hand, even if it might seem like a good idea that would help parents, is it the right of the courts? And how far can the courts go? And aren't the courts interfering in private lives more than they should already? Those are the questions. Those are the questions to be considered when we look at something like this. And I believe in the coming days, we're going to have to deal constantly with the authority of the courts and the authority of the government in our private lives. And how far should it go and not go? All right. Let me just make a special announcement to you. I think you understand that here in the Line of Fire and in the ministry that God's called us to do beyond this radio show, we are really on the front lines, not just in places like India and Israel, not just raising up missionaries, sending them out around the world, but you understand, right here in America, reaching the lost sheep of the house of Israel, right here in America, confronting gay activism, right here in America, standing up to equip and strengthen the body, calling people to turn to the Lord. We're on the front lines, and it's often very interesting. For example, Wikipedia, which is an open online encyclopedia people can contribute to, and then you have readers and people trying to make sure the content's accurate. Sometimes the articles are great. Sometimes they're terribly biased. Well, behind the scenes, I didn't even know about this. Someone just informed me that on my Wikipedia article, after it mentioned some of my Old Testament and Semitic writings, scholarly writings, someone logged in from New York and tried to input this information. Brown debates Judaism based on his own misinterpretations of the religion, copying the methodologies of other messianic evangelists. He tries to convince others by distorting history and facts. Brown distorts stories from the Talmud elsewhere in order to make his points, etc., etc. And Brown relies on the ignorance of his religious victims to establish himself as an authority on Judaism in their eyes, which, of course, is why I deal most of the time with highly educated rabbis. Anyway, we're in the thick of things day and night. That's why there's constant attack. That's why there are editorials in the gay newspapers going after us. That's why we're getting attacked by counter-missionaries, etc. I want to appeal to you, if you are blessed by what we're doing, if you believe in what we're doing, if you want to enable us to go on stations across America and to reach potentially millions of people with the Line of Fire broadcast, would you join us as a monthly supporter? Would you hold our hands up, stand with us, or would you even send in a one-time end-of-the-year tax-deductible gift? If you'll do it, we want to send you absolutely free for everyone writing in to support us this month with a gift of any size, absolutely free, my two-hour debate with Dr. James White as we stood together debating the Trinity on Jewish Voice broadcast. Here's what you do. Write your check to the Line of Fire to P.O. Box 5546. That's P.O. Box 5546. Concord, North Carolina, 28027. Or go online, askdrbrown.org. Click on support and request the free DVD when you're right. Thanks for joining us today on the Line of Fire. Hey, are you ready to hear the 12 days of winter? This was sent to me yesterday, and it's absolutely fabulous. You can watch it on YouTube, but there's not a lot to watch. It's more the audio, so you won't miss anything hearing it. You can give me your thoughts, 866-34-TRUTH. But to get the link, go to askdrbrown.org. AskDrBrown.org, and click on the Line of Fire. All right, let's take a listen to the 12 days of winter.
On the of winter, my teacher taught to me, we can't have nativity scenes. On the second day of winter, my teacher taught to me, Susie has two mommies, but we can't have nativity scenes. On the third day of winter, my teacher taught to me, Islam is peaceful, Susie has two mommies, but we can't have nativity scenes. On the fourth day of winter, my teacher taught to me, our military's evil, Islam is peaceful, Susie has two mommies, and we can't have nativity scenes. On the fifth day of winter, my teacher taught to me, diversity. Military band, Islam good, Susie has two mommies, but we can't have nativity scenes. On the 12th day of winter, my teacher taught to me, you don't need a gun, gotta save the planet, don't mention God, Ninth Circuit good, cradle to grave, no right or wrong, tolerance of others,
diversity.
Military bad, Islam good, Susie has two mommies, but we can't have nativity scenes.
No, we can't have nativity scenes.
Yeah, I will play that later in the week, Joey. Keep that available. Again, if you'd like to watch that yourself, go to AskDrBrown.org, click on the Line of Fire for the link. All right. Also, if you missed my reading of the editorial in Q Notes, the local gay lesbian newspaper, if you missed that editorial about me, with mention also of my friend Flip Benham, then you can go to our website, read the link, and make sure if you do write in, if you do share a comment, that you do it in a respectful, gracious way, with the greatest goal being to reach out to the young man, Matt, who wrote the editorial. You know, hearing that 12 days of winter, if you didn't catch the thing about Ninth Circuit good, so about the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which has had some of the most crazy rulings in American history, some of the most out there rulings and often overturned by the Supreme Court, which would be the next step up from there. That's the Ninth Circuit. Good. But, you know, you might say, ah, come on, I've been hearing they're trying to get Jesus out of Christmas for decades. I've been hearing the same thing as long as I can remember. Well, let me give you a good perspective. You should always live with a certain holy tension. You should always live with a recognition that we are in this world, but we are passing through. You should always live with a recognition that as much as we have godly people in the government as a whole has its weaknesses. As much as authority is established by God, there are weak human people in the midst of it and often wicked human people in the midst of it. And therefore, there are going to be a lot of things that are mixtures. Look, the same authority that Paul said to submit to in Romans 13 was ultimately the authority that did evil and chopped off his head. And we have to understand we are in this world. We are not in a utopia. We are not in a theocracy. We are looking forward to a theocracy when Jesus himself returns and destroys the wicked and sets up a kingdom of perfect righteousness and justice on the earth, and then ultimately a new heaven and a new earth. But until then, we are in a world that is mixed, all right? There has never been a time when America was a, quote, Christian nation. And many times in our history, it was much more Christian in many ways. In many periods of history before, people were much more God-fearing, much more oriented to the Scripture, stronger family values. But at what point did our nation, come on, look at our history. Think of our history. At what point in our nation were we a totally Christian nation? And on top of it, since when is the celebration of Christmas the proof of being Christian? Oh, now I'm opening a can of worms. That's right. We're going to be getting into our discussion in the coming days. Should we celebrate Christmas? And we'll be hearing from passionate folks on both sides of the equation. But for now, just a reminder, let's always stand up for what's right because we're always in a battle. No, let's not retreat and quit. Let's always stand up for what's right. Let's always shine the light. Let's always be unashamed because we are in a fallen world. Back with more. You know, it's often an encouraging thing when certain people take issue with you, speak out against you, tells you you're doing something right. And other people, when they speak out against you, it's painful because you consider yourself to be in the same camp with them. And then when it's someone very close to you that's that's telling you the truth where you need to change, you take that to heart. But there are those who, when they come against you, oppose you, it's actually a good sign. And the fact of the matter is, with Southern Poverty Law Center, these days when they're calling you hate group or anti-gay group, it's actually a badge of honor, the truth be told, because they are so disqualifying themselves. There's an article that I was referred to, the SBLC, the quotable Mr. Potok from Watching the Watchdogs WordPress. The Southern Poverty Law Center now has nearly 190 million tax-free donor dollars available in its bloated endowment fund, and received just over 31 million donor dollars from its most elderly donor base last year. That's a lot of money. Friends, when I encourage you to send a tax-deductible gift to our ministry, you'd be amazed at what we do with a little. You'd be amazed at how our folks live. You'd be amazed at the efforts that are made to touch people around America and around the world on a limited budget as we honor the Lord and act and live frugally. So these numbers are mind-boggling to me. Much of the financial success of this most profitable of nonprofits must be attributed to the SBLC's $143,000 donor dollar a year public relations guru, Mark Potok. Mr. Potok, who has no legal or law enforcement background, earns his six-digit salary by maintaining an ongoing fear campaign that plays fast and loose with the facts, or in cases such as the SBLC's infamous hate map, simply manufactures facts out of thin air. Prior to coming to the highly lucrative hate industry, Mr. Potok was a part-time stringer for the USA for USA Today in the 1990s, a position that, no doubt qualifies him, obviously sarcasm here, as an eminent scholar on hate groups. It might be informative to reflect on some of Mr. Potok's more interesting comments to the media over the years, which speak volumes as to the beliefs of his employers at the SBLC. On the SBLC's own definition of hate group, quote, "A hate group has nothing to do with criminality or potential for violence. Rather, as Potok put it, it's all about ideology." USA Today said the FBI does not monitor groups just because they have hateful ideology. There must be some criminal evidence of criminal wrongdoing. According to SBLC's standards for consigning a group to hate mat, hate group activities can include criminal acts, marches, rallies, speeches, meetings, leafleting, or publishing. In other words, you dare take issue with our ideology. You dare take issue with what we have to say, with what we consider is right, truthful, just. And you are branded a hate group, and we got the money to make your life miserable. Which leads me to my bottom line. What are my thoughts about the California law where judges can sentence parents of first-time convicted kids in gangs to mandatory educational classes? I'm not sure. I need to find out more about it, think about it more, consider it more. Is it useful or is it an unnecessary government intrusion? I am personally not sure, and it'll take me some time to come to a conclusion on it. But I'm sure about this. There will be government intrusion. There is government intrusion. There will be court intrusion. There is court intrusion, telling us basically how we can and cannot live. And I am all for those who say that government should be very limited in its control, its influence into our lives. There are fundamental freedoms that people died for in our country, and those fundamental freedoms have been the strength of America, and we need to foster those freedoms and cherish those freedoms lest we lose them. So on the larger level, looking at the SPLCs of this world and their alleged hate lists, and then the government wanting to enforce so-called hate crimes standards, beware, friends. Some things that are precious to you may be challenged in the coming days.